You're listening to the NASM CPT Podcast with Rick Ritchie, the official podcast of the National Academy of Sports Medicine.
Hey, y'all, and welcome to the NASM CPT Podcast. My name is Rick Ritchie, and I want to point out the commercial that you listened to, that lead-in commercial that's going right in here that talks about certified wellness coach. Now, we've been running that commercial for a while, and the course is launched. It's ready to go. So we're going to talk a little bit about the certified wellness coach. And there are a lot of questions about what that is. And I want to point out that it's not just another fitness education product from NASM. This is something completely new. It is a different category altogether, and we are going to talk about it today. I want to first read the foreword to the course from my friend and the product manager, Rich Fahmy. And this kind of breaks down. This is what the course is about and who it's for. And I want to discuss that. And then we're going to get into talking with my guest today, who is an author in the course. So let me read this intro, this foreword first. It says, "With life's ever-increasing demand, a focus on wellness has become a necessity. More than ever, the importance of restorative sleep, mental well-being, intentional movement, a healthy diet, recovery, and stress management has come to the forefront of our lives, and it can be challenging, even overwhelming, for professionals and clients alike to know where to spend their time as they initiate effective and lasting change. So NASM Certified Wellness Coach Program transforms the way professionals coach and guide their clients. Being an NASM certified wellness coach means you are prepared with the latest evidence, best practices from the worlds of health psychology, positive psychology, neuroscience, sleep, brain health, emotional health, movement, coaching, and more. You will be ready to truly meet clients where they are and support them as they make their best holistic choices for the best choices for their holistic well-being. Thank you for being here and being a part of this journey. We hope you enjoy this course and remember that you and your clients can do the following. And it lists: live a purposeful, intentional life. Be confident in your inner wisdom and expertise in who you are. Cultivate a growth mindset and sense of endless possibilities and realize the power of small wins and upward spirals to your continued success," from my friend Rich Fahmy. And now I'm going to introduce our guest for today. She's been on the show before, and she went to school, studied positive psychology, and we turned to her to help author some of this course as we moved into the certified wellness coaching space. Darlene Marshall, how you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing well. It is good to have you back. So thanks for being back. And please, for those of you who do not know who you are that missed that episode, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to get into this wellness coaching business.
Yeah, well, I'm a fitness and wellness professional, first and foremost. So funny enough, next week will be 10 years since I got my first job as a personal trainer. I was working in the West Village in New York City. I was beyond excited to have gotten my CPT and to be on the training floor, writing programs, helping clients. And that's really where my core within the fitness industry started. And then along the way, I did what many fitness professionals do. I started getting new certifications, learning new skills, you know, nutrition coaching. I learned a little bit about how my clients should be sleeping. I learned a bit more about regeneration and foam rolling. But along the way, one of the big things that jumped out to me was how much their mindset and their relationship with themselves was affecting their outcomes. And I started to discover the science of human well-being, which is the field of positive psychology. So I'm one of only a handful of fitness professionals that has a master's degree in positive psychology. As far as I know, I'm the only personal trainer to get that advanced degree. And so really what I do is look at this relationship between our well-being and how we live our lifestyle, and how do we incorporate those in a bi-directional relationship. And along the way, I was fortunate enough to be working on CWC. And that's been a big focus of this past year, was bringing that passion for how fitness, wellness, well-being, what does that soup of words mean? And how can we be using it for our clients in really effective ways?
I love that. Also, I'm just going to drop this. You're also the host of the Better Than Fine podcast, of which I am a fan. So shout out to you and that podcast. I love it.
Thank you.
You are welcome. Let's talk about wellness coaching for a minute, because a lot of the things that you talked about in your positive psychology studies have been incorporated into this course. And so I want to talk about wellness and what it means, because at one point, NASM had interviewed personal trainers. They spoke to numerous personal trainers, and they oftentimes fancied themselves as wellness experts. And that's not true, though they may be experts in one aspect of wellness, but not wellness experts. So can we talk about wellness and what that is, and maybe why the fitness professional, we're delineating wellness and fitness. We're kind of sending it on different paths. And even though there's a Venn diagram, right? They intersect, they interact, but they are not the same thing. Can you speak to that with it for us for a little bit?
Yeah, I think in order to really differentiate these, we've got to talk about, like you're saying, the relationship of fitness, wellness, well-being, even health, because we do start to get this bit of muddy water around these terms. So I think most of us can agree that when we're talking about health, we can talk about what are the clear measures where we can say either we have the presence or the absence of some disease or dysfunction, right? We can be like, yep, I went to the doctor, I got my blood work done, I am healthy, gold star for me. But then if we open the aperture a bit, then we start looking at wellness and fitness and what they mean. And like you're saying, I see them as these two circles that for some people tightly overlap, and for others, they might be quite disparate. So I think of, you know, my friends who have been professional fighters, when they're cutting weight to prep for a fight, their wellness really suffers in the name of their fitness. So we have this physical, potentially even performative aspect to fitness that sometimes may be antithetical to wellness. So what's that about? Well, I think wellness is about our vitality, our holistic experience of being a person, having a body, being able to show up completely in our lives. And fitness is going to be related to that. But fitness more specifically is about, what do I want to use that body for, right? So maybe that's is performative. I know we've talked in the past, when I train a pregnancy, I always tell my pregnant clients, like, okay, this is going to be one of the biggest athletic events of your life, is bringing that person in the world. Well, that's an athletic performance in some ways, right? So there could be this performative aspect. This could be this functional aspect of my fitness, my body, how I relate to my body, how I move in the world, and even the nutrition I put into it. But all of these are subcomponents of this idea of wellness. And then if we open up that aperture even bigger, we get to well-being. And that's really the holistic human experience of flourishing. And so that's going to be things like meaning-making and purpose and having a job that feels good and relationships and a community, my sense of engagement or accomplishment, and even how much positive or negative emotion I'm experiencing in my life and how I'm relating to those things. And so if we consider that while all of these have significant overlap, the words that we use as lifestyle professionals have to have meaning, or what are we talking about when we give ourselves a label as a professional? And so to your point, I often see that, you know, trainers who are a few years into their career, they have their CPT, but they also, it's like CPT and, so they've got extra tools in the toolbox. They really know what they're doing. Their business is humming. And I often start to hear them use the word wellness when they want to differentiate themselves from someone at the beginning of their career. And I did this too, because I'd started to collect these other lifestyle certifications and I wanted to differentiate, but I didn't necessarily know how. And that was one way to do it, as opposed to just getting really clear with my clients about what we could accomplish and what we were working on together.
Yeah. And I think also when you look at some of the things that fitness professionals can do, then we look at things like, all right, well, you know, we're trying to help you with fitness outcomes. Now, when I talk about fitness, I'm talking about physical fitness. As a personal trainer, I'm talking about physical fitness. And I think fitness is, it talks about, you know, are you fit to accomplish something? Do you fit in the work towards aerobic capacity or anaerobic capacity? Are you fit to do these things? And so fitness and physical fitness in particular is going to be looking at moving towards a goal, as you mentioned, when it comes to our physicality. Now, we also have other coaching tools here that we oftentimes will talk about nutrition, right? And we have the Certified Nutrition Coach, which is a fantastic, it's a great product. But when I look at that and wellness, then I have to understand also that wellness is far more than exercise and a healthy diet. There's more to it than that. So let's kind of break into what that means so that we can now shift our focus for those who are listening to this as fitness professionals and start looking at what it means to be a wellness professional and how we open up the door to so many more things with that conversation.
Yeah. I think it would be helpful if we can just disambiguate trainer and coach a little bit and the type of service that that person provides. Okay. I think that's also going to help with this conversation about fitness and wellness. So when a client comes in, you know, like I'm getting married in May, so I'm planning my wedding. I have a trainer who's writing my program because I have a very specific date and a very specific set of goals about how I want to look and how I want to feel for my wedding. Okay. And how many of us in the fitness industry get that client, right? Like that's a trope, but it's true. And so as fitness professionals, as personal trainers, we have people coming to us with specific outcomes that they are looking to achieve. We set SMART goals, we write programs, we guide them through these programs and we tailor them, but that's our lens, right? Is being an expert in fitness, in getting a body to adapt to a stimulus to produce a particular outcome. And we're good at it, right? Like that's our bread and butter. And then it's this question of, am I giving the right stimulus and the right doses? And you are the man for that, right, Rick?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Yes. You are the man. I will say it. I don't have to ask it. But the flip of that is how many times as a trainer or when I was managing trainers, when I was mentoring trainers, did I have people who would just ask, well, how do I get my clients to do what I tell them to do? Or why won't my clients do the program I wrote? And, or this other big case that comes to mind for me often is the client who comes in and during consultation says, I just want to be healthy, or I just want to feel good. And how do you write a program for, I want to feel good. And that to me is the difference. It's not this specific outcome and a specific adaptation. It is an exploration of a client's holistic experience as a person, their experience of their wellness, and guiding them to figure out what's going to work for them in their lifestyle. Yeah. And that's a really different lens because on the trainer side, it is expertise driven, right? The trainer knows how to get the body to adapt. Let me give you the specific exercises, the specific nutritional outcomes. This is what we're looking to get your body to do. Whereas on the wellness and the coaching side, it's very much my client is the expert on their life, and I'm trying to guide them through a process to make better decisions moment to moment, long term, regardless of how long we work together.
Yeah, nice. I love that because I think that we need to, you can look at this as a lifestyle certification, right? So it's a lifestyle education, but how to coach that. And when we talk about lifestyle, then we're going to look at the wellness components of that lifestyle. So I want to say, okay, when somebody comes in and says, can you be healthy? I want to be healthy. I want to feel better, function better, live better, or I might have something that is a pathology in my life. Can I still have wellness? And the answer is Yes. The answer is yes, we can still have wellness. And you're not going to do that by working out two times a week with a personal trainer. You're going to do that through the coaching process. And that's where I want to really drive, is that this is, again, far more than exercise. It's far more than healthy eating. It is that truly holistic approach that is unlike anything else that we have done in the past. So with that being said, I want to reintroduce Darlene Marshall. And she is a positive psychology coach. She studied positive psychology at UPenn, and she's a personal trainer. And she is an author of the course, the Certified Wellness Coaching Course. So again, thank you for being here. And let's dig in a little bit deeper into understanding about, you know, lifestyle. And one of the things that was mentioned early on when I read the foreword was something that I love. And I had heard from you a while ago, and I want to bring it up, which is something called upward spirals. So if you don't mind, I would love for you to speak to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Upward spirals is the foundation of what I wrote my thesis on. So I will absolutely talk about upward spirals as long as anyone will listen. But upward spiral dynamics is this compounding effect where you do one positive thing in your life. You make a positive tweak, you have a positive experience. And because of that positive change, you get this positive emotional reaction that becomes self-reinforcing. And then because you feel good, you do another good thing, and then another positive change. And these little tweaks create positive feedback loops that lead to lifestyle improvement. And the work of Barbara Fredrickson, who is not only a positive emotion researcher, but she created the foundational research of what we call upward spirals, has shown that many of our lifestyle behaviors can cause upward spirals. So things like loving kindness meditation puts us in a better mood. We have a better disposition. We tend to be more friendly to others. And then that friendliness builds more powerful social connections. We tend to meditate again, and it creates this positive feedback loop. The same thing can happen if we really like a particular kind of movement. So we know that somebody who wants to do more physical activity, if we ask them what they like to do, and they go off and do that, they're much more likely to not only get more physical activity in and have a better long-term lifestyle outcome than if, say, a trainer were to write a program for them, but it's a program that they don't particularly like or they don't really want to do. Well, as soon as they lose that external accountability, they stop doing it. They don't like it very much. They don't get the same lifestyle benefit long-term. So maybe they get that short-term adaptation, but the long tail of improvement doesn't cause this compounding upward spiral effect. Now, there are other mechanisms in there that we might know as personal trainers, like just really liking the person you work with. It creates excitement and enthusiasm. They have a positive experience. So I want to be clear, I'm not saying that trainers, we don't trigger upward spirals. We definitely do, because we have the most contact hours of any lifestyle practitioner. So it's a very powerful position to be in someone's life. And I love talking about upward spirals to fitness professionals of all walks, because we have this great opportunity to have this lasting positive impact in someone's life.
Oh, I think that is a clear delineation between what a personal trainer is and what a wellness coach is, because those are not the conversations that I have with my training clients. That I don't just say, hey, let's talk about meditation, positive feedback loops, and these kind of things. One thing I do talk about in fitness, but I think it applies in different ways with wellness, and we can go into what that means for our well-being, what it's like for our mindset, what it is like for how we engage in life and in those around us, is small wins. And we talk about small wins. BJ Fogg, who's a great researcher on this, has a book called Tiny Habits that I think is a fantastic read. I think these things are vitally important. So when we talk about small wins for personal training, I go through my SMART goals and I go, okay, we're very specific. We're going to measure it. It is attainable, relevant. It's time bound. I'm putting that small win, and that might be pounds, that might be PR, that might be repetitions, you know, all of these things that are fitness related. What are some of these small wins that we talk about as these small changes can lead to those upward spirals.
Yeah, I want to give a nod to BJ Fogg as a positive psychology practitioner.
Because
he's got a positive psychology base to his work. And you'll find that many of the people we talk about in fitness, like Angela Duckworth, the author of Grit, she's at Penn. She was my statistics professor. So many of the people that we're already talking about, Csikszentmihalyi, who only just passed away a few months ago, he is one of the founding fathers in positive psychology, was a very good friend of Martin Seligman, contributor to the MAP program. So many of these concepts that we are drawn to in fitness have positive psychology roots. And that's another reason that I'm really excited to see it trickle up in the NASM ether. But if we're talking about little wins and their compounding effect, so often when people come into the training relationship, they come in with that big end goal in mind. And of course, an experienced fitness professional is going to help them find benchmarks and, like you said, set SMART goals along the way that we can really check these objective checkboxes. But as someone who runs a dual practice, so I have training clients and I have coaching clients and I have hybrids, people who do both. The training clients were really looking at those objective metrics. Let's check those boxes and are we hitting our goals? Whereas the coaching clients is the space that we can make a space for their subjective experience. So I'm asking them things like, well, how do you want to feel? And oftentimes, like, how do you set a goal around emotion? It's not SMART, right? It doesn't fit the acronym. But it does create an opportunity for us to set intentions and to start looking inward and building self-awareness and self-efficacy, which are not these simple checkbox metrics. Like, how do you write a program for, oh, we're going to develop your self-efficacy next month and progress it, right? But the effect of the little wins is as you're building your self-awareness and you're seeing yourself change, how that shifts your self-perception and your relationship with what's going on internally. And so one of the big differences for a wellness coach versus, say, a personal trainer is, as a personal trainer or a nutrition coach, I will be telling my clients what to do. I will be making tweaks. I will be tailoring. I'll be checking for their, compliance in our accountability check-ins. But am I necessarily sitting down with them and examining their relationship with their movement and what emotional experience they're having during and after whatever physical activity they might be doing, whether it's training or not, their relationship with their food and their nutrition as a whole, or their relationship with their body and their self-talk. So there's all of these other layers to where the little wins can come from, where because I've got a coaching paradigm with that client, they may say things like in the beginning, oh, I should be eating a certain way. I should be working out this often. I should be, I have to, right? Their language choices. But over the course of our relationship, I'm able to see, oh, did you catch how you reframed yourself on that one? That's a little win. Or did you catch how you're no longer using the phrase, I just have to get up an hour earlier to get a workout in? Did you catch how you do this? And it creates the positive feedback loop between us that person then internalizes. And it becomes how they talk to themselves. We're teaching them the skills that a coach uses into their relationship with themselves.
Leading into things like autonomy and self-efficacy and moving them towards those things. I also want to point out, like, if you're a fan of some of the authors that you had mentioned, like Angela Duckworth and Grit, Carol Dweck and Growth Mindset, Nihai Csikszentmihalyi for Flow States, Martin Seligman for Flourishing, BJ Fogg for Habit Change, Daniel Pink for his take on self-determination theory. And these authors, those are not who you read as a fitness professional to be better at being, you know, like programming exercise.
Yeah.
But those are the authors that fit in line with this course and the science of wellness and wellness coaching and mindset. And then it's not just that we talk about coaching, but we also talk about the business of coaching. So the kind of pragmatic and proven methods that other successful coaches have used to navigate this and establish yourself in the industry as a wellness coach. So we don't just kind of set it out there. Here's your education and now you're certified, but we also go into the business of how to do it, which I also think is really valuable.
Oh yeah. When I think about my own journey in the fitness industry, that moment of deviation where I had been reading things like Grit and Flow, and I could see this horizon opening of what I wanted to be able to offer my clients, but I was still in this scope of a trainer and the expectation of a trainer that comes from a client, right? Because I think one of the challenges we're having with the last few years of how our world is changing and what we can see in our clients, we want to have more to offer them to help. And in that moment of expectation, they want the information, they want the guidance, we want to be able to give it to them. So you're reaching for resources. And this is what I was doing. I was building out my toolbox, but it was outside of my education and scope as a personal trainer. And that also meant that I didn't know how to run that business. I didn't know how to run a coaching business or a hybrid business. So I really had to go out there and figure it out on my own and figure out how to talk to clients and what does a coaching intake look like. And so I had gotten other coaching certs, but they weren't necessarily cohesive and aimed at this client and this audience and filling this need. So I think it is a paradigm shift. And I'm thankful now to have all that pulled together. And I also want to speak to, we've mentioned a lot of names and books and practitioners whose research is the foundation that this is built upon. But we also had some of this, what I think of as the next generation practitioner and researcher who were contributing. So people like Kelly McGonigal out of Stanford, who wrote my favorite book of 2020, The Joy of Movement. It's on my shelf right here. Because I love that book so much. We had Alison Brager, who is like the Army's go-to. I know, she's so cool. There's so many brilliant minds who are the next generation of what is coming available to us as lifestyle practitioners that they were foundational to this certification. And
have you had her on your show?
I haven't yet because we haven't met yet.
Oh, you haven't
met? I've had Kelly McGonigal on my
show. I know. Okay. So Kelly McGonigal is beyond brilliant. I admire her so much. She's so smart. When you talk to her, I want to say when you talk to her, you just be quiet, right? So you're like, let's talk. And then you're like, you know what? I'm going to be quiet and just listen to you. I mean, sitting at the feet of the masters, right? And I feel like that with her. And she was kind of the overviewer of this entire course, right? Like she kind of checked in on everything to make sure that it aligned. Alison Brager, I've had her on the show. It's one of our best shows that we had. And we talked about sleep primarily. And one of the things that I want to point out in this course is we do talk about sleep, but not just sleep, but sleep science, the science of sleep, the importance of sleep, the value of it, how it physically, physiologically, and psychologically helps to change you. So when we study these topics and we go in and we have other researchers, which I'm not gonna go into, I'll let you talk about, but this is what we're talking about when we say this is the wellness product, that they're going deep into topics that we are not going deep into fitness, but we talk about it in the scope of wellness. So I'm going to stop playing in your sandbox for a moment and let you go again. But when you mentioned those two people, I was like, please let me jump in. I got to jump in.
Well, let's use sleep as a good example, because I think sleep is one of those ones. When we talk about recovery and regeneration as a qualified personal trainer specifically, we typically have some kind of self-myofascial release. Maybe we've read up a bit on our own to have some other tools that we can nudge people toward. And we're like, yes, sleep is important. You should be getting sleep. And maybe you've read, Matthew Walker's book, Why We Sleep.
Matthew Walker. Yeah.
So maybe. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you know how to coach someone to progressively change their sleep, their relationship with sleep, how they're prioritizing it in their lives, how it affects their relationships, their time management. There's all these other layers to it. And one example that I love to give from my own coaching experience is, you know, I have a client who came to me. We were like, yeah, you're probably not getting enough sleep physiologically. He's like, I know I should totally change my day. And he starts going off about rewiring his day programs. It was like, well, what are you doing in the evening when you're staying up? He's like, oh, well, that's the one time of day I get to just sit with my partner and spend time together because our schedules are so different. Like, why would you go to bed earlier? That's the like bedrock of that relationship. So if I understand my client's holistic lifestyle, then I can see how, well, that's a very important linchpin in his emotional well-being, in his relationship that is the most important relationship in his life. Why would I pull that pin out as a practitioner? But if I don't know that, if I'm just going, nah, you need more sleep, bro. You need more sleep. You got to recover from your lift.
Nice.
It's a very limited scope of practice. And I also want to point out that the movement, the way that a wellness coach is looking at movement is about how it fits in a very similar relationship to what does this person want to be doing? What do they enjoy doing? What's going to give them the emotional experience? What's their relationship to it? Whereas a personal trainer has this very deep, specific, prescriptive knowledge of movement, of, you know, myofascial release, potentially nutrition, potentially, where they can give prescription in a way that a coach never would because it wouldn't be appropriate. So there are pros and cons on either side of the fence. And I would never want anyone hearing me speak about one or the other to think that I'm saying like, oh no, you should be this or not that. Like it's not a binary, it's a spectrum. And for those of us who are fortunate enough as you and I are to have some varied skill sets, it means that we can meet a client where on the spectrum they are that's relevant to their goals. But that doesn't mean that you need this whole pantheon of the alphabet soup. It's really, what are your goals as a professional, as a lifestyle practitioner, and what's the right set of certifications for you to be offering what you want to be offering to the people that you want to be working with?
Oh, Darlene Marshall, thank you so much. This is Darlene Marshall. She is a positive psychology coach, and she is one of the authors of the Certified Wellness Coaching program that NASM has launched. And it is a valuable program. It's an interesting program. It is detailed. It is by far the most detailed content that we've ever put out there. And here's something else interesting, Darlene, is that you do not have to be a fitness professional to go through this course and become an NASM certified wellness coach. It's nice because if we're going to be talking about movement and exercise and movement and physical activity is certainly a big part of wellness and the lens at which NASM will view wellness, but it is not a requirement. And that is also a different thing that we're looking at. So when we said early on in the episode that this is something totally different that NASM has never done, it's a totally different product. It's not a fitness product. It's not. It is definitely a coaching product that moves people toward overall wellness in relationship to so many things in their lives, but really looking at quality of life, looking at their health, looking at what they can do, a positive approach to everything, to their lifestyle, and making physical activity, making self-care, making recovery, making all of these part of life, not just a session that you try to fit in. And now we've done 2 sessions a week out of 168 hours a week. We've done 2. So now you got 166 on your own, and oftentimes feeling like you've got the freedom to do anything else you want because the training session is what you're paying for. And what you're doing here with a wellness coach is something far, far more. And with that being said, there is a price difference, and it is far more expensive. It costs more. But what you get out of this, the program, the detail, and in many instances, the effect that you can have in people's lives and how they can move forward in their wellness and quality of life is far superior in many, many ways. So what are some of these things that we talk about in wellness coaching that we say, okay, well, this is, you know, a different outlook. This is a different perspective, and it gives us the opportunity to do more in terms of fitness and movement, more in terms maybe of nutrition, and that's really kind of a coaching approach, more in terms of brain health, of regeneration and recovery. And then really a big domain is about coaching. And these are the foundational skills of this course, the how we actually move people forward to create trust, to create a bond, to help them overcome some of these obstacles and these roadblocks that they're experiencing in their lives so that they can adopt and move toward positive change.
Yeah, I would hate anyone listening to think that either one of us would think that trainers are not great at building trust. We are, right? Like a movement professional is going to be a rock star at gaining their clients' trust through their onboarding process and their credentials. But it's a different kind of trust relationship, because a training relationship is by its nature prescriptive, right? The trainer is writing the program, whether it's movement or movement and nutrition, and then the client executes on that. And of course, there's some tinkering and tailoring along the way. But as a coach, it is not about me telling my clients what to do. And maybe early in the relationship, I give them some prescriptive homework, but that's really just to get the snowball rolling so that they understand what they're signed in for. And from there, it very much is about them building this concept of autonomy, which is their empowerment to make decisions for themselves in the world, and an ownership that it really is them living their life and working toward, as cliche as the phrase has unfortunately become, toward their best life. And for me, as a positive psychology practitioner, the target is, can I help this person actualize? Can I help this person show up fully in the world, living a purposeful and meaningful life, full of vitality, having the energy and the presence and the, you know, the physical fortitude to be who they're meant to be in the world? And that's a pretty big paradigm shift from, you know, what I was doing when I was first a trainer. But if we're looking at scope and we're looking at tools, if I, as a wellness coach, want to be able to holistically approach what's going on with my client, that means understanding not just how, you know, their macronutrient ratios will affect their recovery or what kinds of movements they might be doing in their bouts of physical activity, but it means understanding recovery and regeneration, even outside of sleep, something like psychological recovery. So we are in an epidemic of burnout as a society right now. As a practitioner, do I have an understanding of burnout, of psychological recovery, and how to have a structured conversation with somebody that empowers them to make lifestyle changes so that they're mitigating for burnout and even building resilience? Do I have an understanding of what resilience is and how their fixed mindset, you mentioned Carol Dweck earlier, their fixed mindset of, oh, this doesn't have any flexibility, it can't change, I'm stuck here, could be shifted into a growth mindset where they believe in their own efficacy, they believe in their ability to change. And do I have the skills and ability as a coach, as a practitioner, to guide them through that process? And along the way, help them self-examine their emotional relationship with their own behavior. What about conversations about guilt and shame? And how often have we as fitness practitioners, as fitness professionals, encountered a client who comes into the training relationship with shame about their behavior, with guilt that they weren't in a different place? And a wellness coach has an education in the emotional nature of shame and how to have a conversation with them about their behavior that helps to mitigate for shame and teaches them the skills of not giving into that, what actually does soothe shame. So there's a big landscape of practice. So it's not just these specific lifestyle domains of like, okay, I check the sleep box, I check the nutrition box, we got some physical activity in there. Okay, good, good, good. It really is, how do I pull it together as a coach and facilitate for this client the process of self-awareness that grows them a lifestyle toward flourishing and, you know, potentially toward actualization, which is a much bigger aperture than we've really seen in the fitness space before, which is why this isn't necessarily the same scope as like corrective exercise specialist. It's a right. whole different journey that we're looking to provide as practitioners.
Right. And I want to kind of move through some original research that I did and why I find this really valuable. And as you know, I did my dissertation on attribution theory and attributional retraining. And one of the things that I did is I went to fitness professionals and I wanted to know, why can't your clients come in and exercise on their own? What is going on that you're saying, this is what I'd like for you to do, but your clients are having a hard time doing it? Now, one of the things that we look at, and then we're going to move away from exercise, and we'll talk about that in a moment too, but there's a difference in perspective. So the client's perspective is so many things, but you know, I don't have enough time, or I can't make that part of my day, or it's the commitment that I have to put in, and then some other nominal things like I don't want to be sweaty, and that's not nominal to them, but you know, for the trainers and the trainer's perspective in the research, you know, I found out that the trainers say you do have enough time. The trainers say you just aren't prioritizing it. The trainers sometimes said that they're being lazy, not to them, but in yeah. confidence to me. I think they're just being lazy. They're not prioritizing. And so the perspective of attributions from self and versus a trainer can be totally different. And what we're trying to do with that conversation is set up how I can get those people that we're working with to align with the personal trainer and what the trainer believes that they need. And that is oftentimes exercise. And we've all had clients that are just like, you know, I sit on the couch and I know I should get up. I know I should do something. There are a lot of things we know. I know I can eat better. I know I can move more. And sometimes they just don't think that what they are willing to do dietary wise or movement wise is enough to actually help them actualize a goal. So if I get up or if I eat a salad and I don't eat it again because that's not sustainable for them, then why eat the first one? It's not something I can sustain. Or you say, get off a stop early at the subway or take the stairs instead of the escalator. And all of that's well and good, but it's just not enough. And what we do is create this all or nothing mentality. If I can't do it all, Darlene, then I might as well do nothing. And I think that is a form of sabotage. And that's not something that many personal trainers are equipped with coaching. Because as you said, they are very equipped with training. They can direct you. They can tell you what to do. They can say, this is what you need in order to reach these goals. But how do I coach somebody to move toward those positive changes that are small and also realize that I'm not going to get them to get off their couch and go for a 3-mile run, even though that might be what they need to do and what I told them to do. And I don't know why they're not doing it. So I'm not meeting them where they are. And I want to know from a coaching perspective, how, right? Like, how are we taking this point where, you know, as I say, and I've said it on your show, a little bit of something's better than a whole lot of nothing. So how do I move people through coaching to do a little bit of something and to make little bits of something part of your life? And then those little bits, as you mentioned, Barbara Fredrickson, Upward Spirals, where those little bits broaden and build. And then they broaden and you build on top of that and it goes wider. And then they desire to start creating small change and maintaining small change. And this is the crux. This is the center of what it is that you as a coach help to develop within your client through a conversation, not through mandates, but through conversations of what small changes they want to do, that they're willing to do, that they will commit to do, and then they won't beat themselves up for not doing it.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I think the first thing that comes to mind is this paradigm reframe that perfect is the enemy of good enough. We know from the research of Barry Schwartz that when we try to maximize everything, when we have this threshold of like, all right, this is the best that it possibly could be, and I need to maximize, I need to be highly productive, I need to have this perfectly organized day, that even if we're able to pull it off, we're way less happy than if we have just a threshold of what's good enough and let me live there. So that's the first thing that jumped out. Good came up a dozen times. Oh, I should get off the couch and I should eat a second salad and I should go for a 3-mile run and I should. But that should, that weight, is this really externalized motivation for behavior. And we know when we are having externalized motivation that we're going to be way less happy with the result, even if we get the result that we want. And what I try to facilitate as a coach and what we support in CWC is, how do I reframe that should, help the client examine their own genuine, authentic, internal motivation, and then teach them how to replenish that well for themselves. And so I typically have my clients replace any shoulding, because you don't want to should on yourself, any nice. Shoulding. Yeah, you like that. With I choose to do it because, and this is a little different. Some practitioners will say, I get to do this, but sometimes I'm genuinely choosing to do something that I don't really want to do. It's not inherently pleasurable. So I'm choosing to do it because fill in the blank. And I'm choosing to get off the couch and move because I know I'll have a better night's sleep. I'm choosing to eat more vegetables because it's better for my digestion and I want to be around for my kids for a long time. Right. And that's a much more powerful internal drive mechanism than, oh, I should do this because it's healthy. I should do this because it's, you know, that trainer said I should. And so when we externalize, we create this like antagonistic relationship with the world and our own behavior. And that's where we get like shame and guilt and other negative emotional reactions. Whereas if we can look at, if as a coach, I can teach the client that reframe, that language, that accessing themselves, well, now they have that skill for the rest of their lives. And now the dominoes start to fall in behavior because they know how to relate to themselves differently, have changed their core relationship with their own behavior and how they talk to themselves. Well, and that's the role of the coach. That's very different than, okay, so let's work through why you're not going for walks anymore. Because you were going for walks early in the pandemic and you said you felt a lot better. Let's work through that relationship is very different than like, okay, so I put it in your tracker and you're going to get 10,000 steps every day. Oh man, it's 8 o'clock at night. I only got 6,000 steps. I guess I failed. Right? Like totally different relationship with the activity and the behavior and oneself.
Oh, that is so beautifully said. And I think that from a coach's perspective, that's, you know, how do we reframe conversations with self? How do we reframe the shoulds? And, you know, this is the self-talk, right? Like this is I should do this. I'm supposed to do this. Where do we move? How do we move forward from all of these things that as you said, if they are should and I don't do it, then we can beat ourselves up for it. We are failing at something. And then there's also kind of this space, this area, this ability to be discretionary with everything, right? With your diet, right? Where you say, okay, well, I'm diabetic and I ate, my son left some of his bagel with cream cheese on the table this morning when he went. And I was like, should I eat that or not? And I had a should moment. And then I thought, you know what? I'm going to eat it. And I am okay with that. Not because I'm failing, but because I'm choosing to do something. And it may not be the best choice for me, but it is a choice that I'm making because I know that I'm going to follow through with other choices throughout the day that aren't going to make me feel that way, that aren't going to loom. And so this didn't loom. And I'm okay with that. But how do you coach that within other people who say, well, I had a bagel, so my day's shot, so I might as well just have pizza, and I might as well just have, and you go through the list of all of these foods that, and we talk about it, food itself is not bad. It is a relationship that ends up eating away at you because of the decisions that we make. So how can we make the decisions that I believe are better for me? And it's good to have somebody to talk to about those things. Because if you talk to your husband or your wife or people that are in your family, they may not be the ones that are like, you know what, let's eat some more whole foods and let's add some more vegetables. Because oftentimes they are okay with where they are. So how do you navigate those things when people in your family and people in your life are not supportive of the changes that you want to make? And a coach can be the anchor for those decisions. And also creating conversations, which we have in this course, the social interactions that you have with people and finding people that support you and your goal and your vision for yourself.
I have to laugh a little because, you know, my fiance has been a trainer for 23 years and I still don't want to hear from him when he thinks that I need to change my nutrition because that's not what that relationship is for, right?
That's
when
right.
He picks on how my squat form looks, I'm like, just send a video to my trainer. Like, and I do. I also believe coaches should have coaches, trainers should have trainers, partly so that we understand the paradigms of how those relationships influence us. And also because it's nice to have someone else tell you how much to lift before your wedding. But to your point around this paradigm shift within oneself, you said a few things that I was really happy to hear you say. And one of them is around me choosing what's right for me, right? Like, what do I think is the right decision? And I want to highlight this, you know, very specific paradigm difference that I perceive between training and coaching, which is as a trainer, it is my expertise that influences my decisions. And my favorite example that I give to clients when I'm trying to help them understand this difference is, you know, The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, when he was training.
Talk about him all day. Let's do it.
All day. Let's do it. When he was training for Hobbs and Shaw. Did you see Hobbs and Shaw?
I did.
Okay. You know, the scene at the end where they're in Samoa and he's got his shirt off and they're like going to war with the primitive, you know, primitive weaponry. So Dave Rienzi trained him for Hobbs and Shaw. And The Rock had a great series of Instagram posts and in his social media about Rienzi's program for him. It was written up in every men's fitness magazine you can find. Apparently leg day was like a form of torture, but Rienzi had also programmed every bit of his nutrition, all of his sleep, his supplementation, like all dialed in to be able to execute so that a man in his 50s, when he showed up to that shoot, looked like this iconic physique that we're still talking about a few years later. That is the antithesis of the fitness professional who truly understands their craft and is able to write a program to produce that physiological result. And that is about their expertise, which is different than the client who they are the expert on their own lives. They've been living in that body for how many decades? And I'm just visiting for an hour a week to make these little tweaks and give them information and skills to help them go off and make better decisions in their life for the rest of their life. So one of them is about a particular trainer's expertise, which is incredible that that's what they're able to do with another human body. And the other is about guiding a process and meeting someone where they are on their journey, as opposed to a trainer's going to have the answers. Okay, how many days a week do you need to lift? What should you be eating? How do we get you the adaptation to get the physiological result? But not everyone is there yet. Not everyone is in a place where they can make that much space in their lives, or they have some kind of emotional attachment that they need to work through, or a mindset shift of what's even possible. And having the skills to meet that person emotionally, psychologically, where they are, and guide them into their own potential. So, you know, I've got a number of coaching clients over the years who I've passed off to other trainers because I'm like, okay, you're at a place now, you're ready. You're looking for a very particular type of training or a very particular adaptation. There's something that's changed through coaching in where you're at. I know the perfect trainer for you. Go with God. And seeing them flourish because they've gotten to a place where that's what they are, that they're ready, willing, and able to take on.
Right. And I think this is kind of an interesting differentiator too, is that if I have a personal training client that says, just tell me what to do, I don't want to have to think, just tell me what to do. Then as a trainer, I'll go, that's amazing. I will tell you what to do. And I can go through what this guy did with the rock. Like, I'll just give you the answers. You follow the program.
Beast.
Right. As a wellness coach, that's not how this works. This does not work with, let me just tell you what to do and you do it, because that's not what coaching is. Coaching is pulling from you what it is that you should do, that you will do, that you're interested in doing. There's so much more than telling. And I think that's a telltale of what we don't do as a coach is tell somebody what it is, be prescriptive. And I think that's a great story, and it helps us to better understand where we are as a trainer and where we are as a coach. And it doesn't mean that trainers don't coach, but
oh, yeah.
Wow, does this course really set you up for coaching?
I do want to spell that out, that like, I don't think of them as binaries. They're not separate worlds. It
Correct.
Is a spectrum. And I might be a coach that uses my knowledge of yoga training to influence what I might recommend to a client, what I might help them try. Oh, you know what? I've noticed this about your movement. Maybe you could do XYZ before you go to class or something. Like, I'm going to bring that into my coaching relationship.
Yes.
The flip of that is I could be a trainer that has looked into self-determination theory, or they've listened to enough of you talk about your work in attribution theory, where I'm starting to really understand like, oh, that language my client is using isn't really informed change language. There's something else going on here. And I can start using the tools of motivational interviewing to start asking more informed questions, right? Like, I'm not saying that it's one or the other. It can be yes and, but the thing about certified wellness coach, the thing about CWC is that for the first time in my experience in the industry, here is a completely new certification that is bringing together all of these holistic tools to better equip, whether it's a wellness coach who's only looking to work in the scope of a wellness coach, or some other fitness professional who's looking for a broader scope of practice and a more holistic approach that they can offer in addition to whatever their fitness modality already is.
Darlene Marshall, that is how you wrap up a podcast. That was fantastic. Yeah, drop the mic, girl. Drop it. Thank you so much for being here with us. Please feel free to tell people where they can find you and follow you. I'd love for them to also listen to your podcast. So let them know a little bit about that as we wrap this up.
Yeah, absolutely. My Instagram is at darlene.coach. My website is also darlene.coach because I like to keep things simple. The podcast is Better Than Fine. You can find a lot of coaching information, deep dives in positive psychology. Plug for that Kelly McGonigal episode because it's pretty great. And that's really the best ways to find my footprint and out there on the internets.
Awesome. Darlene, thank you so much for being here. I want to thank those of you who are with us. Thank you so much for listening. And I hope this gave you a better idea about the Certified Wellness Coach and what went into it. And I'm telling you, there are a lot of chapters and there are dozens and dozens of PhDs and subject matter experts in their specialized topics of movement and of sleep and of nutrition and recovery. And this is an incredible course. I cannot wait to do it myself. I was happy to be a contributor to it as well. please, if you have questions, feel free to reach out to NASM directly. If you would like to reach out to me, then I would love to hear from you. I'm on Instagram at dr.rickritchie, or you can email me at rick.ritchie@nasm.org. Thank you so much. This has been the NASM CPT Podcast.